Well, we had intended to speak with you today about exotic earthworms and their impacts across the region, and I'm hoping that we'll be able to do that at some point. But Cindy Hale, who is our guest, has took ill just at the last moment, and we were so I'm sorry that she's ill. And Cindy, I hope you get better soon. But Phil Pelletieri is with us and has come by to talk with us about the world of insects. And Phil, thanks for coming by on this very short notice.
Nice to be here, Larry.
I tell you what, this time of the year, no mosquitoes yet.
Well, not many, but we do.
I have had emails
for the last 5 or 6 weeks when we have these
warm spells.
And what it is that we have a handful of species that overwinter as adults. And so if things do warm up, I've had complaints in January in certain years, but we had that nice weather about 4 weeks ago. People would email me that they're already out. Well, it's not the wave that most of us anticipate. That's probably a good 5 or 6 weeks away yet, but there are some out there.
There are a few. Well, I haven't been bitten yet, so I'm happy for that. And, you know, as I was looking around the house, we're doing some remodeling now on the house, so the house is kind of opened up and so forth. And I was thinking about, there was a couple of insects that had gotten in one thing or another, but I was thinking about the Asian lady beetles, because this winter, I think about every 3 weeks, we'd see one poor little Asian lady beetle wandering around the house.
Yeah,
and that was it.
The thing that's fascinating about them is most insects that overwinter as adults go into basically a hibernation-like state, and it takes them time to wake up. But these things, as soon as the temperature is above 50, they start crawling. And you would think biologically that's not a smart thing to do, because what we find indoors is that they burn themselves out. They have very little food reserves. There's nothing to eat, and they don't last very long. So it doesn't seem like a smart strategy, but as we know, they're relatively successful in the environment.
One had impaled itself on one of my cactus plants.
Oh, dear.
But they don't last very long, that's for sure. By the way, if you have an insect question and you want to join in, the number is 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison at 263-1890. Give a call. Stan in Monroe County will go to you. Stan, hi.
Hello there. Last spring, I was working on the corn planter on the lawn, and this big insect flew in. He looked like a black ant on steroids. I mean, this thing was huge. And it watched him for a while, and he ripped off his wings. I was wondering what the heck that was.
Well, although termites are notorious for doing that, I think it was an ant, and it was a queen. And what happens with many ant species is they develop wings, and the kings and queens, they go flying off and mate. And then when it's time to start a nest, they literally will tear their wings off. And because they have to have the food reserves to raise their first group of young and whatnot, the queens are often 3 or 4 times the size of the average worker. So that all fits. And if I had to take a wild guess, I would think it was a carpenter ant, but because those tend to be the largest types of ants we run into typically in Wisconsin.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Phil in Hebron, Illinois. Your turn. Hi, Phil.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
A quick question for Mr. Pelletieri. After he was on last time talking about colony collapse disorder and honeybees, I've been goofing around on the internet and doing some searches, and I wondered if he knew anything about this. I believe it was Finland where the study was done about interference from cell phones affecting the bees' ability to return to the hives. It looked like a pretty ingenious study that showed some pretty positive problems as to what this causes with the bees.
Well, it is definitely one of the things that's in the mix as far as the possible cause, but what does not fit the pattern is this collapse disorder really has, for whatever reason, accentuated in the last 6 months or so, whereas we know that the cell phones and whatnot have been in use for quite some time. So we would have thought more of a gradual buildup to the problem. And so, as I said, I do know that there appears to be some behavior changes in bees, but at least from the people I know that are looking at it, they're not totally ignoring this. But as I said, like so many of the theories that have come up, they just don't fit the puzzle well enough to be an explanation of what's going on.
And it appeared from that paper that it's still debatable if the disorder is in England and Europe. Is that true, or do they have confirmed cases there?
Well, but, you know, how you define the disorder is kind of, as far as I'm aware of, there have been implications to problems of fall drop, or as they said, there's come under a number of names, but trace back as far as 1989. And definitely, you know, in Europe, there have been some problems. Some of them have been related to pesticide use. At least that was a suspicion. Although, as I said, when you start to look at some of the studies, that doesn't seem to fit the pattern either. So as far as I'm aware of, as I said, there has been something going on for maybe as much as 15 to 16 years. But for whatever reason, in this last 6 months in the United States, it has just seemed to explode.
Thank you for the information.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Phil. Appreciate it. Donna in Madison, we turn to you. Hi, Donna.
Hi, how is it going?
Great, thank you for calling.
Yeah, I have a problem with, I'm finding little tiny a pile of sawdust-like stuff coming from a door on a closet that's a hollow door.
Mm-hmm.
And on the floor, here's these little specks of, and what do you suppose is in there?
I'm strongly suspicious there's ants in there.
Ants?
Yes. We do find ants at times take advantage of hollow core or void spaces. And it's not that they would destroy the door, but sometimes they move things around. And this material that's coming out, the sawdust, is probably a mixture of wood product, but it also could have insect parts. It's kind of like their garbage pile is what you find.
God.
In fact, that's how usually when people find this kind of stuff, how I confirm it under the microscope is I find, you know, little legs or antennae of insects, which is in the diet of many of the ants. And so, you know, if it was the winter, one of the options sometimes is just to pull the door and leave it outside and freeze them out. In this case, though, what may be most appropriate is there has to be a hole that this stuff is coming out from, which would be an access point for spraying an ant spray up in there. And what would be probably the most efficient is if you can find a spray can at the hardware store or whatnot that has one of those little red applicator straws like you see on a WD-40 can.
Yeah.
And that's made for pinpointing the spray in there. And, you know, a couple squirts and you're done with it. It really isn't that involved. But as I said, I can't think of anything other than ants that would give you that kind of symptom.
It's only in one door, too. All of my closets have these doors, but it's only that one.
Yeah, and it would be very unusual to have it in more than one. I just think they found a little environment and have moved into it. And as I said, now they're giving you evidence of them being present.
Well, are they just ordinary ants? Or are they red ants or black ants or that kind of stuff?
I mean, if I had to guess, they're either pavement ants or carpenter ants, but that is a little bit of a guess. I mean, we do have, and that's the problem with ants, is they're not so easy for people to identify. In fact, even entomologists have fun sometimes trying to sort these out. But those two ants are the ones that most commonly will nest indoors, and neither of those would surprise me. Now, the carpenter ants range from middle to large, can be both black or black and red. Pavement ants are relatively small in comparison. They're getting not quite tiny, but from the medium to smaller size. And that's a European ant that has been moving into the Midwest probably for the last 20 years. And I've seen pavement ants do the same thing. So as I said, I'm not sure which of the two it is.
And I've never seen ants in my house, ever. Well, okay, I'll do as you say.
All right, give it a shot, Donna. Thank you very much for calling. And on to Jean in Middleton. Hi, Jean.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I appreciate all of your knowledge. We have over 20 oak trees, and we're wondering if we should put some sort of a sticky band around the trunks to protect them from the bad bugs that like to eat oak trees.
And the only thing that is used effectively for is something called a canker worm. And canker worms are those little inchworms you see in the spring. And the females do not fly. And what happens is they literally crawl up the trunk of the tree. And so a sticky band would stop that. Cankerworm outbreaks, it's a native insect, and we only see outbreaks occasionally, and they're bad for a couple years and they go away. So at this point, I really don't see you gaining much by putting a sticky band around the tree.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And Julie in Oshkosh, we turn to you now. Hi, Julie.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Phil.
Hi.
Your lady beetle things earlier, which have been the bane of my existence for the last couple weeks, reminded me that all winter long, probably every, I'd say, 3 weeks, we would have 4, 5, 6 houseflies that would just show up and would be buzzing against the windows and would not live real long but would die and then wouldn't see any for a while, and then suddenly there would be a new crop of them. And I was just wondering Sure. Are they laying eggs somewhere?
No. Well, see, I don't think it's house flies. The common problem we get, especially if you had some lady beetles, because this one is a similar story, there's a critter that looks very much like a house fly, but is technically called a cluster fly. And interesting enough, in the summer, it is a parasite of earthworms. So it has nothing to do with garbage or animal waste. Its maggots kill night crawlers in particular. But as adults, they spend the winter in sheltered sites. And so if you have a structure that is susceptible to Asian lady beetles, you also get these guys. And then the same thing happens. You get warm days, the walls warm up, they tend to wake up and fly around. They're not very effective at living very long. There's no way they can breed indoors. And so you basically, some people call them winter flies because of that, because you can see them all winter long. And now that we get in the spring, I've had a handful of calls where people maybe never saw them in the house, but they were hiding up underneath their siding. And on the warm days, they come up and they're getting ready to fly away. But as you know, we haven't had that many warm days. And so rather than leaving, they go back underneath the siding to spend a few more weeks until things warm up. So the only difference would be is if they were very shiny flies, then they are usually blow flies, which we associate with dead animals.
But, yeah, and these are pretty little.
No, I my gut feeling is they're cluster flies, and as I said, especially if they fit the same pattern that we see from the Asian lady beetles, and they come in just a couple weeks earlier. It's usually around the first or second week of September that they tend to come in, and then again can bother people all the way until early May, depending on the weather.
Okay, well, thanks very much.
Yep, thanks, Julie. And Joanne in Jacksonport, hi to you.
Hi. We have a cottage, and last fall, right near the foundation, I noticed a clump of what I think are box elder bugs. Mm-hmm. We do have a large box elder tree near that. And for some obscure reason, I didn't do anything about them right away. And then they started getting into the cottage. And I think there's some activity now. There's a few in the cottage, and I think I have a report that there's some outside near the foundation. And I thought, well, I think I need to spray.
Yeah, I say no. I mean, indoors you can vacuum them and take care of them that way. The point is that they will be moving back out onto the trees. And if you spray or not, I don't think that's going to influence where the populations will be next fall, because there are ones overwintering in other sites. What basically regulates their population is moisture. And so if it's wet year, they're not there. If we get dry spells, especially in the late summer, they will be. And then you can address it next September. That's the appropriate time to address it.
And what would you do?
You can spray anything from soap water solutions when they cluster, or a number of insecticides on the outside. The argument about them indoors is if you spray and kill them, you got to sweep them up anyway.
Right.
And so that's why you just vacuum and get rid of them. And the point is that if you get them before they get in, you've got a chance of really having a good solution. If you let them get under the siding and whatnot, you spray and you just kill a few, and a few more wake up the next day. And so, as I said, I don't find that very productive, and especially now that we really are close to the time that they're going to be leaving the cabin.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. And Mike in Eagle River, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Good morning to you, gentlemen.
Morning.
Quick question. I have not exactly a wood tick problem, but I'd like to know, is there any natural remedy, I guess, to control wood ticks in, like, your lawn or whatever, besides keeping it very well manicured?
Chickens or guinea hens.
Yeah.
They will forage on them.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Anything?
Is there any non-chemical, like a spray that I could use? I have a dog.
Yeah.
No.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to let you ponder that a little bit more. You've got the answer right now, Phil, but we will ponder. We'll hold you in suspense, Mike, here for a couple of minutes. We'll take a look at the news, and then we'll be right back with our UW Extension entomologist, Phil Pelletieri. Stay with us. Talking the world of insects now with Phil Pelletieri, UW Extension entomologist, Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you listening in. As we broke for the news, Phil, Mike was on and had a question about ticks and wondered about getting them off his property, his lawn, and you suggested chickens, but what else could we use?
Well, a couple thoughts. I mean, there are some natural food flavorings that are registered as pesticides, things like clove oil and whatnot, that if you sprayed on a tick, it would kill them. But I would tell you that just keeping the lawn mowed really is a pretty hostile environment for ticks. It's not where they do well. In New England, where we worry so much about deer ticks and Lyme disease, they have even talked to some people that are out in the woods of having an area at minimum that is raked free of leaves, but even putting a swath a couple feet wide of gravel on the exterior of your property, so you basically have a desert-like environment the ticks don't want to cross. So that's a concern. Now, as far as treatments, if you were to look at the local pet store and we're going to put a tick spray on your dog, what they often use are synthetic versions of pyrethrin, and the most common registered product is permethrin. It's the same product registered for people on clothing. Permethrin is also sold as a general spray for lots of things, and that would be something, I wouldn't spray the lawn, but you spray that edge 6-7 feet from your lawn stops and where the wood starts, but it's not natural in the sense that it's a synthetic chemical. It's not one found in nature, so it's not officially organic per se, but one spray of permethrin is absolutely devastating on ticks. I mean, ticks have a 2-year life cycle, so they don't recoup real quick. And so again, if you treat the ones that are in that marginal region and knock them off, that would be the option. But as I said, the problem with the oils and the like, they don't have residual. So if you spray them on the tick, you got them now. But if the tick shows up 20 minutes later, it's not going to be effective.
Not going to be effective. Stephanie in New Berlin, your turn. Hi, Steph.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good. I have a question about termites. I don't know if it's termites. Every fall, and on the back of my house, it's one day. They look like ants, and when they're really little, they're red. And they go from really little itty-bitty small-looking ants and little white egg sacs to these things that are flying all over the yard, all over the... Even when I look in the neighborhood, they're...
Yes.
And they're clustered in this area right at the back of my house, and they're all in the grass behind my house. So I asked my mother, and she said that we don't have termites in Wisconsin. So I guess that's
not
my question.
That's not true. We have termites in Wisconsin as far north as Green Bay, and... they're still spotty, but termites tend to swarm in the spring. What you're seeing are ants, and they're probably cornfield ants. It's a genus we call Lasius and very common out in the lawns. Once in a while, the little ones come in, and the difference in sizes are between the workers, the males, which are small, and then the new queens. And usually the swarming phenomena happens in the late afternoon, sometime
in
August
evening,
and September.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And what you are witnessing is literally a... sense kind of like an ant orgy, because all these ants are leaving, looking for males from other colonies and mating, and the success rate is really quite small. But the phenomena is very well defined. And so, as I said, you're seeing the queens and males leaving from the colony next to your house, and the ones you're seeing in the neighbors' yards are just other colonies. And the whole idea is to mix and get some genetic mixing here, and then the fertilized queens are responsible for starting new nests by themselves, which is a pretty difficult thing to do. So, again, this is not an ant we get too nervous about, because it's not a structural ant. It doesn't bite. It's just sometimes occasionally a nuisance, but not even that often. So, you know, as long as they're not bothering people, they're probably less just let them be.
Oh, that's great, because I was concerned that they were, you know, nesting in my house, and all of a sudden the back portion was going to fall off someday.
Yeah, this is not an ant that likes to nest indoors. It's more of an ant that sometimes nests under cement slabs, and it tends to be a sweet feeder, so it's, once in a while it will, you know, get on spilled juice and that kind of thing, but I really don't see it to be much of a problem.
Wonderful. You ease my mind.
All right, Stephanie.
Thank you.
Yep, thanks for calling. Mark in northeastern Iowa, your turn. Hi, Mark.
Good afternoon. My question, the little Asiatic beetle, enormous amounts in September, October, November, but even then, even the rest of the year, I still have them right now. Inside is, of course, where I care about it, but if they cluster on the outside wall when the sun's there. Many solutions for us here.
Well, again, you're paying for everything that was active last fall. I mean, their behavior is to seek shelter. They get into wall voids. They get into attics. And then they kind of wake up, and they really don't flush out until it may even be mid-May, the way the weather's going right now. Mm-hmm. And then things seem to be very, very quiet. I mean, you get a few natural ones, but their behavior is not to come indoors until the fall, usually after the first frost. And so the two things we talk to people about is, one, if things can be tightened so they can't get in. But if you've got, you know, plastic siding and whatnot, that has to be somewhat loose to begin with. And so the other option is there are sprays, whether they're commercially applied or you can apply them yourself. We usually talk about the last week of September before this congregation starts. but the sprays both repel them and kill them. So they don't get in the first place. And if they don't get in, then you don't see them all winter and into the early spring. And so, as I said, that would be, they're basically barn sprays. They're pyrethroids, much like we had mentioned, the same chemical that was used for the ticks. But there are many pyrethroids out there, cyfluthrin, bifenthrin, lambda-cyhalothrin. What's interesting is these are the sprays now when you go to the local hardware store, they are the dominant sprays that are being sold. But what it takes on the average house, you know, if you've got a two-story house, you want to spray the south side for sure and possibly the west side. And so it may take upwards of a half gallon or a gallon of mixed spray to cover the soffits around the windows, all those landing areas. And as I said, what will happen is they'll refuse to land on them, first of all, because these are some repellency to these products. But if they do land, they will die before they get in.
Okay, attack them before the freeze.
Right, and because right. The freeze is what the trigger is. So as I said, the last week of September, the first few days of October are usually that prime window, and that's what it's all about. There is a small window to really make a difference, and that's it.
Okay, I appreciate your time.
Yep, thanks, Mark. Thanks for calling. And Mary in Menasha, it's your turn now. Hi, Mary.
Hello, Phil. I have a question. We put in an oak hardwood floor last fall, and we've recently started seeing very small amounts of sawdust.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little pinhead hole.
Mm-hmm.
Is this something to be concerned with?
Well, it's disappointing. What you probably have is powder post beetle, which is an insect that attacks seasoned wood. And under the right circumstances, they can keep attacking the wood. Now, what's hard here, I think you should chat with the people that put in the floor and at least make them aware that you're having problems.
Okay.
Sometimes it's only a couple holes and they just kind of go away on their own. What's hard to predict is their success will depend on the starch and moisture content of the wood. And what you often see, it's just one board or one section of one board that's giving you the problem. If you said mm-hmm. that I'm seeing signs that on all my wood, then it gets a little bit more involved. And the only way you can stop these is basically to sand the floor and then treat it. They usually use a borate solution of some sort or another. So it's quite involved to go through the sanding and retreating. Sometimes we find that a better solution is just to replace the one or two bad boards. And again, okay. It may die out on its own. So it's a little hard to predict, but we get into some really interesting discussions about who's responsible here. And, you know, basically I can assure you that unless you had this wood in storage for months, that it was the problem at the lumberyard. Or whoever they got it from. If the wood was kiln dried and protected, it would not have these insects. So something is amiss here. But as I said, you know, a couple little holes, that's not so bad. You can put a little putty in and we're done if the insect stops. Under the worst case scenario, they can cause quite a bit. I mean, it is considered a wood destroying insect under the right cases.
So it could probably eventually affect the structure even.
Well, the interesting thing is that they only get into hardwoods, and so most of the lumber in our house is softwood, so they won't bother mm-hmm. that. And anything that is painted or sealed before they get there, they can't get into. So the case here is they were in the wood before it was finished.
Yes, because they're coming right through the polyurethane.
Right, and they can also use those holes as an access point to get back in. But I hate to see people get too concerned. As I said, I've had people call me, they've had two bad pieces of ash in their flooring, and they want their whole house replaced, and you just kind of mm-hmm. say, well, you know, that's not what we normally expect. What we have in favor in our climate is powder post beetles don't do real well because of how dry our wood gets in the winter. And so oftentimes, over time, they die out on their own. In fact, I know they'll do that for you, but as I said, I don't know what the moisture content is of the wood, how much starch is there, how bad the infestation is. And I think you'll get a pretty good picture, though, in the next 2 to 3 months. The prime time of activity is usually from April into June. And so, you know, if you get lots of little piles of powder, then I think you can consider taking the next step. And you can always call me on campus and we can talk about what those are. But I think for now, at least make the person who installed the floor aware that you're having at least some concerns so that this is not a surprise a couple years from now. And then they start to say, well, this problem, you know, is it got in your house and wasn't in the wood.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Fine. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks, Mary. Ann in Stoughton, your turn. Hi, Ann.
Hi. We have a stone house, and in the second floor window, we are having both pill bugs and earwigs. coming out from behind the trim around the window. And I'm wondering if these are in my walls or if they're coming in from outside.
Probably not the walls. Is this an old kind of rubble foundation, or is it just normal brickwork, or?
It's limestone.
Mm-hmm.
And this is up on the second floor.
Well, you know, both those critters and the millipedes too tend to migrate around at night, and then when the sun comes up, they look for places that are cool, damp, and dark. And so my guess is, you know, because the stonework tends to be a little bit on the cool side and damp anyway, is they're just walking around. And then when the sun comes up, they're congregating. Although I would tell you that I'm a little concerned that you may be getting a little bit more moisture around that window than you would really want.
Okay.
And, you know, ultimately the moisture is more of a concern than these critters because they're living in a specific environment. And as I said, I would be expect it to be more on the north side of the house just because that tends to be cooler and damper anyway. But as I said, I don't think they're breeding there. I don't think that they're really a problem in the walls, but I think they're congregating there because of what they find. And it's a little unusual to have a second floor be that damp and cool. Now, it may be something as simple as you can caulk something and they can't get in there and then we don't see them anymore. But as I said, I'd keep my eyes open on what's going on there.
Okay. There is a stone sill to the window.
Okay.
And I don't know if there's leaves on that.
Okay. Yeah.
Because it's hard to get to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wouldn't be overly concerned.
Okay.
Because, as I said, these things do crawl quite well and will congregate because when it does... The sun comes up, they can't get caught out in the sun without desiccating. And so that's why they kind of squeeze into these places that are damp and dark and cool if they can find them.
Okay. Is there a spray that I can spray in there that will kill them?
Basically, any of the ant sprays will work, but spraying stonework and concrete, the sprays don't last very long in that case.
Okay.
What people will often do is either go with a powder, and that unfortunately leaves a residue. What the professional people do is they have the same sprays, but they're formulated into either soluble concentrates or microencapsulated forms, which basically last longer.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, I'm not so sure. I think I would just, you know, go get an ant spray, just spray it there. And under worst case scenario, you might have to apply it a couple times during the summer.
Okay. This is, I'm especially concerned because this is right above the head of the bed and they're falling mm-hmm. onto the bed. So it's kind of gross.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, as I said, you know, I would look around. If there's any place that's pooling water or there's any organic matter, get rid of that. Because as I said, I think if you dry the environment out, they won't want to hang out. But definitely, you know, just spraying along that windowsill with an ant spray will make a big difference.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, Ann. Thanks a lot for calling. And Kirk in Franklin, it's your turn next. Hi, Kirk.
Hi. Yeah. I'm having a problem with ants. Definitely getting in the house with a lot of soldier ants coming in. I can't find where they're coming from. I've seen outside. We've got them all around. You can't even really see where the nests are or anything. I'm just wondering, is there like a pesticide out there that you can use that will actually kill the queen or anything? Because I've used pesticides before on these ants. And it seems that they become immune to them right away.
Well, I don't know so much immune. I think it's going to take a little more detective work. I'll give you a couple thoughts. You know, one of the things that a pest control service will do, or you can do yourself, is apply what is called a barrier treatment, where you spray around the outside foundation, usually 3 or 4 feet out and a couple feet up. And what that does is prevents ants from coming in from outside. It really doesn't kill the queens because they're back in the nest, but they don't like to cross the treated area. When that treatment doesn't work, there's one of two thoughts. Either they're nesting indoors or they're getting to there another way. And I will tell you, one of the things that we find, if you've got any overhanging trees and the like, that sometimes if you've got limbs that are close or touching the house, that's the bridge that the ants are using. So if it was something as simple as that, just going up and pruning those branches will stop the bridge and the ants stop coming in. Now, there are baits available, but what gets tricky about the baits is different ants like different things. And so there are baits for sweet feeding ants, baits for protein feeding ants. Baits take a little longer to work, but the whole concept of baits is the worker ants pick it up, carry it back, feed everybody, including the queen, and that will knock them out. And so,
yeah, I noticed that these are actually sweet feeding ants because they do go straight for if something spills, like a soda or something, they sit there and they lick it up.
Okay. Well, then one thing you can use, there is, and you can often even see this at the grocery store, a taro ant poison, which is basically a honey sugar-based bait with boric acid is what the toxicant in is. Boric acid is a stomach poison. So if you get the ants to feed on it, and if you go that way, though, what you've got to do is continue to give them bait as long as they're interested. What I find sometimes is people put a couple dabs of bait and think that's going to work. Well, if you've got a colony with 20,000 ants, it's going to take more than that. And so, you know, you can put this stuff out in a piece of wax paper or put it in some kind of container that the ants can get access to and just make sure that there's always bait there for them to get it. And that will be a way of killing the queen. And whether the nest is inside or outside, the baits will work as long as you can get the ants to pick them up. Okay, there are commercial... other baits, Max Force, Combat, Advanced. I mean, there's other baits on the market. If you go that direction, though, again, the whole trick is to pay enough attention to what the ants like and make sure that the bait is formulated for that kind of ant.
And what's the name of that again?
Well, this one is Taro, T-E-R-R-O.
Taro. Yes. Okay. I'll remember that. I appreciate all the help.
All right. Thanks a lot, Kirk, for calling. And on to Maureen in Oshkosh. Hi, Maureen.
Hi. I have a question about larder beetles.
Mm-hmm.
I work in a mausoleum, and we get larder beetles in the crypts.
Yes.
And I'm wondering how they get into the building since they don't fly. And I asked our exterminator about it, and he said, it's always been a mystery to me.
Wait, are you finding larvae or adults?
The larvae just, you know, they just fall right out.
Yeah, the larvae don't fly, but the adults do.
Oh.
And the adults are little black beetles with what looks like a tan vest around the middle.
Right. Well, we would find those crawling around on the floor, too, but
yes.
I've never seen one fly.
No, they are definitely capable of flight. They do have relatively strong wings. And so, you know, typically what happens is that, you know, the casket is seal is busted to a point or opened enough that they can get access. And those in forward flies are creatures that are quite common to mausoleums, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Vern in Appleton, we'll go to you now. Hi, Vern.
Hi. I have a question about a spider for Phil. I have had a spider between my window and stone window all winter. I call her Charlotte. And she was alive. Now, she hasn't made an appearance for about 2 weeks, so I think she probably had died. But how in the world could that thing live in this cold weather that we've had? And nothing to eat. She would come out once a day anyway for a while on her web.
Well, you know, a couple things. I mean, we do have some spiders that do typically overwinter as adults, but they are basically hibernating. I mean, excuse me, not being active. And I wonder if you're seeing the same phenomena that we have with these Asian lady beetles, that because of the environment the spider found, it was warm enough to stay active. But unfortunately, there was no food available.
Yeah.
But they can go an extended period of time without feeding. And again, the cooler the temperature, it's the engine isn't running as fast. And so they definitely can live longer. But the break-off, I would think, is the temperature where the spider is found. If it's above 50 degrees, it can be active. If it's below 50 degrees, it cannot.
Well, you know, she was black and white striped, too, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that bitter cold weather. I looked up there, and my golly, there she was. I thought I was seeing things at first.
But I wonder if that, in between the pain there, it was warm enough. You
and
know.
She was real. I watched her move once. That's what caught my eye.
Mm-hmm.
And she was very slow.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
She was there almost every day, and I couldn't believe that she'd be living there.
yeah, it is still, I think, interesting because that's a pretty extended time to be active.
It really
was.
In fact,
yeah.
When you were on with the bees, I called, but, of course, they wouldn't take my call for that. She was there then. Mm-hmm. But, no, she's, like I said, she's been gone for a couple of weeks now.
Well, you know, I'm guessing it's probably an orb web spider, which are some of the more larger and colorful spiders that we get. Many of those overwinter as eggs. The females will go as long in the fall as the weather will allow. They lay an egg sac, and then in the spring of the year they hatch, and then the little spiderlings start everything all over again. And so, again, in a sheltered environment, they can be drawn longer, but it is, I think, quite phenomenal. You know, normally you'd think if they make it to January, they're doing well.
Boy, I thought so, too. I kind of was rooting for her, but
mm-hmm.
kind of disappointed she's dead.
didn't make it.
Didn't make it, though. But I don't see her anywhere, but... But she's definitely not showed up for a couple of weeks.
Oh. It'll be interesting in the fall if you see her children around. I wouldn't be surprised.
Wouldn't be surprised. Thanks for calling, Vern. Appreciate it very much. And Mike and Amory, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, hi. I have a general question about flying insects. Something that I've always wondered about, we all know that flying insects are attracted to lights at nighttime. Why aren't they attracted to the brightly lit moon in the sky and try to fly toward the moon? And during the day, why don't they try to fly toward the sun?
Well, not all insects are attracted to light. In fact, it's interesting. Because we use light traps as a way of monitoring certain insects, but you got to be careful there because it doesn't give you a true picture of what's flying because some things like it, some things don't. We honestly think the moon is something that's involved here, but the moon is so far away that insects use the light as a navigation tool. And so you figure if I'm going to fly 15 degrees to the left of the moon, I can fly and get somewhere. But if you are attracted to a light, which is basically mimicking the moon, and you're close, if you fly 15 degrees to the left of it, what are you doing? You're flying a circle. And that's what draws you in. So that's part of it. Definitely during the day, they are not attracted to light. There are some insects we know that use polarized light, like honeybees and whatnot, to kind of orient. But in general, insects are not, it's totally different. So the phenomena of being attracted to the moon is at least what we think is responsible for many insects being drawn into lights and getting confused, really, is what it comes to.
And thanks very much for calling. I appreciate your call. And Phil, thank you so much.
Nice to be here, Larry.
Always a pleasure, and we'll look forward to your next visit. Phil Pelletieri, UW Extension Entomologist. He'll be back soon, and we'll do this all over again with him. Coming up tomorrow at 11, Gunther Rock of the Office of the Commissioner of Insurance and Barb Bailey of the Colonial Club in Sun Prairie talk about insurance choices for seniors. And then at 11:45, we'll talk with Neil Fiore, who's author of The Now Habit, and that's about procrastination and what it can cost you. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.